And welcome back. And I guess we could call this the current installation of the update and report from Father Paul Kramer on the war to save the Catholic Church. The war to save the real Catholic Church, which has been penetrated and taken over by people who have no interest in the traditional values of the Church at all. Father Kramer, are you there? How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. Unfortunately, the Church is not doing too well.
Well, we need to do something about this. I don't know what. I've made suggestions, but unless there is a group of august and brilliant minds like yours and Vigano and a few others who stand up together and make the pronouncement that it calling for all true Catholics to stand up, to stand together, and to stand against this revisionist horror that's being perpetrated, I don't know what chance there's going to be. There's no, I don't see any noise anywhere about the war to save the traditional Catholic Church. And I should. I should be seeing it in my journeys through the so-called news. But there's nothing there, Father Kramer. Nothing.
I think they don't, in the hierarchy of the Church, those who have some understanding that what's happening in the Vatican is an aberration, they still don't get it. They still don't understand that these people like Tucho Fernandez and Robert Prevost, who calls himself Leo XIV, that these people are not the Church. They have renamed the Catholic Church the Synodal Church. Now, that's a very interesting phenomenon when you consider it. There has been a true aspect of synodality in the Church for 2,000 years now. So synodality has existed in the Church as it should always exist in the Church, has always existed in down through the centuries. So when they want to make a change in the Church, and they call it now the Synodal Church, and that, as Bergoglio himself said, it's going to be a different Church, that means the new synodality is not going to be the same as the Catholic synodality that preceded it. It is something different.
Right.
Of course it's something different. That's why Bergoglio said it's going to be a different Church, because it's a different kind of synodality. It is something that is constitutive of the very essence of the Church, and that is not what synodality was in the past centuries. What we have taking place is best described in the theology that was brought out by Pope Benedict XVI in his article on Tychonius, that the ancient Roman thinker who surprisingly was not a Catholic himself, but he hit the nail on the head as far as understanding the nature of this cancer that grows within the body of the Church.
And the it's stage three, verging on stage four now, I would say, and I'm just not seeing any appropriate efforts being made to crush it, to dislodge it, to expose it, to reveal it. I'm still not seeing that. And is there anything to stop you or four or five others who are true voices of the real Church from standing up together and pronouncing what has to be done? There has to be a split. There has to be a... We have to rewind this horror back to get to the real Church. I don't know how it's going to happen. Why can't we get four or five people like yourself together to make the statements that need to be made? They would make the media.
We need some leaders who can, first of all, have the discernment and understanding to know that this brand of synodality that's being pushed by the Vatican today is something that is opposed to the very essence of Catholicism and Christianity as such.
Right.
This has to be understood. You have men like Cardinal Burke, Raymond Leo Burke, who has already to himself been somewhat persecuted by Bergoglio, even before the present man came in.
Hmm.
And Cardinal Burke is even asking the question, asking these infiltrators, what is synodality? As if he's going to get a straight answer from them?
Oh, that's really absurd. You're right. It's no. What a waste of time. What's he doing?
Tucho Fernandez is not going to give a straight answer, what is synodality? Because if Tucho Fernandez would give a straight answer, then Cardinal Burke and the others would understand perfectly well that these people are enemies of the church, that they have a different church, a different religion, and they're trying to stamp out Catholicism. The old religion is to be stamped out, and the new religion is the Agenda 2030 of the United Nations, of Freemasonry. That's why you get these vague descriptions of what is synodality.
Let me ask you this. If we went up to the average male, female member of the real church and asked him or her, could they define a synod or synodality? Do you think they could? Now, synodality does go back in church history. It's not new. It allegedly was fading away around 10, 12 years ago, and then it came back with a vengeance. Boom. Synodality.
I mean, anybody who has studied church history, I mean, you read about synods going back many centuries. The famous synod at Whitby. The synod at Whitby, we're talking about, you're talking about the first millennium. I mean, this is something very old in the church.
It's not new, but the corruption and the illegitimate way it's being used now to overthrow 2,000 years of history, it mind boggles me. I just don't understand why there's not yet standing wholesale civil war in the church. I just don't get it. I would think there would be. There's more than enough evidence out there to show the rank and file that the church has been targeted and is being disassembled, taken down, reformatted, whatever. It's not happening. We're losing it. And the church will be lost. And then people like you will be standing out in the cold and the rain. I don't know where the good people are going to go at that point. I don't know. The good Catholics, the real Catholics. Something has to be done here, in my view, now, to make some real major pronouncements about the evil that's going on. It's just not happening. And I know you have spoken valiantly about that for a long time on this program. And your colleague, is he, I can't remember his title, Vigano? Is he an archbishop? What is he?
Archbishop Vigano.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. But why isn't he and you and a few others, why aren't you together making earth-sweeping pronouncements about what has been done to the church, really in a satanic way that must be addressed now, or there will be no resolving the wreckage that's going to be strewn all over the place? It's just, it'll be over. This the church could be lost, to me and from my perspective, in a rather recent overview of the speed of this. It looks to me like it's happening very fast. It does.
Well, the people like Cardinal Burke and Cardinal Sarah, they do not understand the very essence of the problem.
Well,
when they're talking about...
Father Kramer, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead, please. Go ahead.
They're talking about this man, Leo XIV, as if he is unquestionably a legitimate pope. And at the very least, they should have severe doubts about this man, about the validity of his claim on the papacy. Because it has been established, going back to the papal teaching of Pope Innocent III, that if a man is a heretic, he is incapable of holding the office of the papacy, and he is to be removed. So that is what they have to be looking at.
Who do we call to remove him? Sergeant of arms? Who do we call? I mean, it's so obvious. The guy is a danger and a fraud, and his predecessor was every bit as bad. I don't know. It doesn't seem to be any movement that is gaining any public exposure to reveal the terrible situation in the Catholic Church. Not that I'm able to see.
It is like the Arian crisis back in the early centuries, when there eventually came to be an understanding. The Catholic people and a few bishops were able to have a clear enough vision to understand that the Arians were indeed heretics. They were aliens that were parasites inside the body of the church, and they had to be expelled. And this is the only answer. The synodalists must be expelled. And the way to expel them...
I agree. How do we do it?
How do we do it? We do it by totally ostracizing them, by shunning them totally.
In the media. This has to be out. It has to be able to be read and understood by the masses, 1.2 billion members of the church. They have to be given this information so they can understand what's being done at the top levels. I don't think they're getting the information. Maybe I'm wrong.
Look at the agenda that this so-called Leo XIV is pushing. It is so anti-Catholic. It is so Masonic.
Right.
It is so Masonic.
Why isn't this the talk of the church? Why isn't it being discussed in every church in the world, for that matter? The effort to destroy the church. I don't know. It's odd to me.
They're very slick operators. They're very slick operators. They try to give some Catholic veneer, some appearance. Some superficial show that has a little bit of a hint of Catholicism to it, and so many people are falling for it, and they're saying, well, he may be making mistakes, but he's the Holy Father, he's the Pope. Well,
No. He's a fraud, he's a pretender, he's a fake, and he needs to go. And maybe there are no bishops left who have the integrity to stand up and put their careers on the line. I don't know. Other than you and Archbishop Vigano, I don't know who's even talking about these things.
The church's teaching, the doctrinal and canonical tradition of the church is very clear on this point.
Right.
That if... there are what are called the indicia of heresy, which is the evidence that has to be weighed, the evidence, the incriminating evidence against the man that either, depending on the case, is either lightly causing suspicion or grave suspicion, or beyond what they call vehement suspicion, or there is what is called violent suspicion. Which is such a severe degree of suspicion that it's already morally certain that the individual is an enemy. He is a heretic. He's there to destroy the church. He is against the Catholic faith. There's only one step above that, which is when a person comes out openly and makes it explicit that he rejects the faith. So the case of Leo XIV is that he is violently, violently suspect of heresy. Bergoglio before him was not even violently suspect. He was clearly a formal heretic, clearly an enemy of the church.
Right.
And the fact that Leo the 14th entirely endorses the agenda of Bergoglio is already the highest level of suspicion. And then you add every other piece of evidence, every other indicium on top of that, that makes the man so gravely, so violently suspect of heresy, that it, according to the church's teaching, he falls under the jurisdiction of the church. He is to be judged by the church. He is already to be suspected as not being a legitimate pope. Because if the man is a heretic, he is not qualified to be pope.
He's bogus on the face of it. Now, is there not a mechanism extant in the church to allow you and whomever to bring charges, allegations, to bring arguments forward underscoring exactly what you've just been talking about? Isn't there a mechanism?
There is theoretically a mechanism. It depends. For one who is openly and undoubtedly a formal heretic, the answer was given by St. Robert Bellarmine, a doctor of the church, and the theologians who have developed that theology, that doctrine even more after him, Pietro Ballerini, in a very classic formulation of that doctrine. And then after him, Pope Gregory the 16th. Pope Gregory the 16th explained that such a heretic as that is incapable of representing the Catholic faith.
Well, I agree. I think we all agree. I really do.
And therefore incapable of being the pope, and he's got to be removed. Then the First Vatican Council, in its definition, on papal infallibility was laid down the premise that in order that a pope be able to define doctrine infallibly, Christ prayed for Peter and his successors that their faith would not fail. And theologians immediately recognized that a true pope, therefore, has the grace from God not to fail in his Catholic faith. And so if the man is a heretic, he's not capable of being pope. And it was at that point, that was 1870, by 1895, a Jesuit theologian by the name of Sidney Smith actually made a compilation, somewhat of a survey, examining the doctrine of theologians, and he said, it is now become unanimous among theologians. It is commonly held by all theologians now that a true pope cannot be a heretic. So, conversely, if that man occupying the chair of Peter in the Vatican, if he is indeed a heretic, then he is not a true pope. And according to the doctrine of Pope Innocent III, he is to be cast out.
Well, would you like me to go over there and cast him out? Who's going to do this? It's not just going to happen on its own. I still don't understand. You are brilliant. You have laid this out from day one. You even gave Leo the 14th a chance. A chance, small chance. You didn't pass judgment on him right away. I did. I didn't trust any of it. But I'm not in the church. I really do believe that. Have you spoken to Archbishop Vigano or any of the others about doing anything in concert together to make it clear that not all Catholics subscribe to synodality the way it's being perpetrated now in the Vatican? You need to. Somebody has to start making statements, big ones, big time to bring the guns out.
Well, we go back to synodality at this point. I will answer the question, because don't expect Leo the 14th, don't expect Tucho, Fernandez to give you a straight answer on this question because they're going to give you the answer. They're going to give you their propaganda answer to brainwash you.
Sure, of course.
Let's get the real answer. What is synodality? Synodality is simply the mechanism of revolution. That's what it is.
Well said.
It is the mechanism of revolution to invert Christianity into something that is entirely
blasphemous,
diabolical, something devilish, something satanic, something diabolical, something that is entirely opposed to Jesus Christ and his kingdom.
Right.
That's what synodality is. It is the UN, the perverse UN agenda being canonized into a bogus counterfeit religion in a bogus counterfeit church. That's what synodality is. And and they're bringing about this macabre transformation of the very infrastructure, that outer facade of the church, that's the only thing they can get is the outer facade. The inside of the church, the soul of the church, the true body of the church, they can't touch that. They can't get it. They can wound it, but they cannot gain possession of it. And this is that doctrine of Tychonius that was brought out by Pope Benedict XVI, that bipartite body of the church, where you have that cancerous tumor growing inside the body of the church. But as it grows bigger and bigger, it eventually, it's in the very nature of the heresy that it declares itself to be a heresy. And it, in the very act of declaring itself to be a heresy, it expels itself from the church, and that's when the Catholics are going to have to stand up and say, look, this is where we part ways with those people. They are outside. They're on the outside looking in.
Right.
We have to preserve our church by shunning them, by having nothing to do with them. We don't call these people Holy Father.
Right.
We don't call them the legitimate pastor.
Don't.
We Absolutely. Call them the
don't
enemies
the
of
game.
The church.
Right, right. Don't play the
they
game.
They are the enemies
Is it
of the
time?
Church.
Father Kramer, would you consider writing a statement, not long, a short, to-the-point statement, assaying the problem, pointing out the perpetrators and how they are beyond redemption, and I do believe they are beyond redemption, and then asking others to sign on to your letter declaring war on the Vatican or something? I'm sure you would word it more articulately than that, but maybe not. Maybe that's what needs to be said. Maybe a document needs to come forth with Archbishop Vigano, et cetera, signing on with you, multiple signings at the bottom, something that declares what's going on here. I think it's they have successfully kept this largely a secret. Again, I'm not in the church, so I'm just telling you what it looks like from out here.
I've already laid the foundation for that in an article that I wrote just after I finished my first two volumes. And what is basically the foundational idea of my third volume is summarized in a brief article I wrote called "The State of the Church at the Time of the Death of Pope Benedict XVI." So, just as Pope Benedict died, that's when I wrote that article on the state of the church at the time of the death of Benedict XVI.
Right.
Where I explained what is synodality. I explained that synodality, that they themselves, Bergoglio himself said that synodality is constitutive. It pertains to the very constitution of the church. It's something essential to the constitution of the church, and which it is not. It is something that is of great necessity, but it is not the determining attribute of the church that makes the church the Catholic Church. It is the synodality does not make the church Catholic. what makes the church mm-hmm. is the apostolic tradition, the apostolic mm-hmm. foundation, and the successor of Peter over the entire college of bishops. That's what is the constitution of the church. It is a monarchy. It is not a synodal aristocracy. And right. this is how they are inverting the very constitution of the church, and not saying that they're inverting it.
Well,
this is why they fall into.
They need to be called out. Perhaps if you were to write something, a paper, and weave into it the third secret, you could do that.
I'm already working on it. I'm already working on that.
Oh, good. Good to hear. Well, I'll be happy to help you launch it here, wherever. I think this is a very noble, absolute necessity to do. Otherwise, we are going to see the end of 2,000 years of an institution on this planet that has served a lot of good. Some would say a lot of bad, and it has varied. But nonetheless, it is an institution of great power, great control, and in some quarters, great respect. And it needs to be saved, or it's just becoming another one world order tool. That's all it's going to be.
Well, like I was saying, synodalism is the mechanism of revolution. And what the revolution does is exactly what Vladimir Ilyich Lenin did. And he described it very succinctly. He said, keep the shell, destroy the substance. And that's exactly what they're doing. The synodalists do not, they are not at the head of the church. They have gained possession of the outer shell. That's all. The body is gone. The body is not in that shell like a snail. It's like an empty shell. The body of the organism isn't there anymore.
Uh-huh.
The synodalists have taken over the shell. The body is elsewhere. Where is the body of the church? The body of the church is where the Catholic faith is. Among the faithful.
Faith is within
among
the faithful. Right.
That's the body of the church. That's exactly the situation we had during the crisis of the Arians, when St. Athanasius, the great church father, said, they have the buildings, the churches, they have the church buildings, we have the faith. They were driven out of their churches, they had to go out into the wilderness. They had to gather out in the wilderness for the mass, for the sacraments, for the liturgy. The heretics, the Arians, gained possession of the episcopal palaces, and such. The only thing they couldn't get back then was the papacy. They tried to get the papacy. At one point, I've forgotten the name of the emperor at the time, who thought he could solve the issue simply by having two popes, co-popes, one Catholic and one Arian. Of course, the idea was doomed. But in that time, unlike with Bergoglio, who was assisted by forces to oust Benedict and replace him, with this bogus anti-pope, Francis. At that time, during the Arian crisis, the Roman people and the Roman clergy, when the anti-pope Felix was installed alongside of Pope Liberius, they ran him out of town. He was not accepted. He was rejected. He was very forcefully rejected by the clergy and the people of Rome. And so the Arians were able to gain a lot of the hierarchy, either bishops who are outright Arian heretics or others who were deceived into thinking that Arianism was not a heresy. It wasn't so bad. It was all the ambiguities and vagaries that we have after Vatican II today. That kind of thing was happening among the hierarchy, and there were so few that were unequivocally Catholic. Very few bishops. You can count them on the fingers of one hand. And St. Jerome summed it up, saying that the whole world woke up one day and found itself Arian. The world groaned. The world woke up and groaned, finding itself Arian. The whole almost the whole church found itself to be Arian. And the heresy at one point was taking over the Eastern Church, at another point taking over the Western Church. But during that period of the Arian heresy, they had a huge hold on the Catholic hierarchy. But on the positions of power within the hierarchy. And it was a man like Athanasius who said, "They have the buildings, we have the faith."
Well,
this
I
is
like
the first
that.
Thing that Catholic.
I could see that at the top of your statement, your declaratory statement. Bring that back. I like that.
These people are revolutionaries, and we have to understand that they are the enemies of the church. They are the enemies.
We understand that. I understand. I think our listeners understand that. What we need is some way to galvanize the true believers and bring to bear on the frauds and the impersonators the truth. They have to be dealt with. No, you can't just. It has to be direct. It has to be loud. It has to be a declaratory movement, a war, a civil war within the church, so to speak. But it has to be formidable, and it can't be just whispered about, or there can't be fragmented parties involved with questioning what's happening. There has to be a united front, and I think you could make that happen. I don't know for sure, but something has to be done of a very powerful and formidable stature, in my view, right now, or soon. Otherwise, these creeps are going to keep getting away with the perversions that they're injecting into the church, which is what they're doing.
That has been the plan to begin with. And the thing that will really set things in motion will be the revelation, the publication of the full, true text of the Third Secret of Fatima, because that is where it's plain.
Good. And then that could be used to sound the call.
If there's one thing that will do it.
To arise and cleanse the Vatican of the filth and malignancy that is currently embedded there. Got to go. Got to go.
Because then it won't be Father Kramer's opinion. It will be the revelation from heaven.
That's fine. That's great. How do we get a text of the Third Secret to quote directly from it?
There are individuals who are in possession of it. And they have to be convinced. They have to be convinced to take whatever means is necessary.
To get the text,
the verified, indisputable text of the Third Secret, to get it out to be published. That's what has to be done.
I got it.
Because those who have read the secret have already told us enough about it. Mm-hmm. That the very heart of the secret, is the counterfeit church.
Wow.
That it will be a. The man who received the secret, not from some secret source, but from heaven, from Our Lady herself, the great saint Padre Pio of Pietrelcina. He's venerated as Saint Pio, a canonized saint, St. Pio of Pietrelcina, and in his discussion with Father Gabriele Amorth, who was a friend of his, Father Amorth related that it was around 1960. He asked Padre Pio, St. Pio, about the content of the Third Secret of Fatima, and Padre Pio wanted to dwell on one point, and he said, Satan has already entered the very heart of the church, the very innards of the church, the very bosom of the church.
And, that's almost 100 years ago, isn't it? When did he say that?
Well, this is 1960.
Oh, okay.
1960. It's almost 70
years
ago.
Well, it's still 65 years, and that's pretty impressive.
And he said, when he said that, he followed up and said, and he said, Satan has entered the very heart of the church and will soon be at the head of a false church.
Wow. And this is Pio?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was published in the book by an author, Jose Maria Zavadas. And I think it's called something like The Best Kept Secret in the World or something like that. Mm-hmm. I have the book, but I can't remember the exact title. I think that the book must have been translated into English by now. I've got the Spanish edition, which is good enough for me. Not everyone is able to read the original language, so I believe it's translated. But in my own book, I have translated that paragraph. Then you have others who have corroborated it fully. There was Cardinal Samuel Stritch, who was the Archbishop of Chicago. And in the 1950s, he went to Rome, and he was accompanied by a priest by the name of Father Lawrence Emmett Hughes. I believe he was from California, Father Hughes. His extended family lived there.
Mm-hmm.
But he was an assistant of Cardinal Stritch. And when Cardinal Stritch went to Rome, he took along with himself Father Hughes to be his assistant. Pius XII opened the secret and read it. And he had several prelates in his company at the time who were witnesses. But unlike when John XXIII opened it in 1960, there was a press release mentioning that it had been opened and it's not going to be revealed. Pius XII did nothing of the sort. He made no press release, but there was notification sent out to chancery offices around the world. Father Hughes, at a family reunion, I think in the year 1957, related that he's under oath, he can't divulge the entire content of the Third Secret, but he said there's something that is so important that it has to be said. I think he mentioned, like Father Malachy Martin, he mentioned that the control that they're going to have over the whole banking system, the whole economy, I think he mentioned that. But the key issue that he wanted to bring out was what's happening in the church. And he said, not today or tomorrow, but there's going to be a reform of the liturgy in the church very soon. And of course, at the Second Vatican Council, the very first document that came out was called Sacrosanctum Concilium. And that was that document was the blueprint for reforming the liturgy. Well, Father Hughes said, not today or tomorrow, 1957, not today or tomorrow, but soon. And, of course, this started when the council was convoked in 1962. He said, this is the beginning of a gradual, stage-by-stage change in the liturgy of the Mass that will lead to the eventual suppression entirely, where the Mass will be entirely abolished. And it's going to be very difficult for Catholics to find the Mass anywhere, because it's going to be such a transformation that the new religion, it's good. I'm paraphrasing. It's a new religion. It's not going to have a Mass anymore. It's going to have something that looks vaguely similar to the Mass. He said it's not going to be a Mass. It's going to be the true Mass of the Catholic Church. The valid celebration of the Mass will be entirely suppressed. So when he said, when you see this movement to reform the liturgy, have nothing to do with it. He said to people, have nothing to do with it.
What changes have been made to the Mass recently? Since the new millennium?
Since the new millennium, they are gradually trying to add pagan elements into the Mass.
They are. You've made that eloquently clear. They're adding, they're injecting, they're introducing, they're forcing paganism into the Church. And the Mass is not immune from it. So, that's part of it.
And they're turning it into a secular community event. It's no longer the renewal. They're making the representation, in the true sense of the word represent, to make present again, that eternal sacrifice of Christ, to make that eternal sacrifice of Christ on the cross, to make that mystically present, but substantially present on the altar in the celebration of the Mass. That is what the Mass is. It's not a community event, celebrating itself, celebrating the community. Isn't it great for us to be together here, enjoying the fellowship with each other, turning the religious act of worship into a community event is what they're doing.
Well, you said it. You said they're secularizing everything. That's where they're headed. It's going to become like a some kind of a service club, an international club. This is not good. I'm hoping that something big will happen, a pronouncement, a declaration of war, if you will, whatever. I just think the sneaky way they're doing this has got to be called out. It's time to choose sides, you know?
The Catholic people, for so many generations, the Mass is what nourished their soul. And when they came up with this new secularized replacement for the Catholic liturgy, people stopped going to church in droves, and they wondered why. And young men stopped entering the seminary. They didn't want to be community leaders. They wanted to be priests. They felt called to the priesthood of Jesus Christ, and they entered the seminary. Now they're going to be turned into social workers. That's not what they wanted. That's not what they
expected.
That's
a very interesting statement, and that's right on the money. Yeah, social workers. Okay.
And then you have these clueless people in the hierarchy and in the Vatican wondering why there's such a crisis in vocations. Well, they created it. They created it by instituting this false religion. This false religion which threatens to exterminate the Catholic Church, but the Catholic Church is not made of mortal stuff. And Pope Benedict gave us the answer, the key to understanding what's happening in the Church, that the cancer rises to the top. It takes over the empty shell, and it declares itself for what it is. And that's when the Catholic reaction will be to confirm their expulsion. They've already expelled themselves. The Catholic Church will confirm that expulsion, shunning them and making a clear line of demarcation between those of us who are of the true faith, the apostolic faith of all time, and the new religion, which is false and bogus. And we have to understand that, like I said, they are to be expelled from the office of the, from the external offices of the Church. those right. who appear to be popes and bishops, they have to be expelled. They have to be removed. And the way to do it, like I said, with St. Robert Bellarmine explained that when they are openly declaring themselves to be heretics, it's much easier. You just declare them outside. When they are
declaring of them being outside? That's my question.
Well, that's where I'm getting. When you have people like this slimy snake Leo the 14th. The answer for how to deal with someone like that was given by another great theologian by the name of John of St. Thomas. And he's talking about a juridical process that, as St. Robert Bellarmine said, that a suspected heretic is a doubtful pope, and a doubtful pope is no pope. A doubtful pope, unlike a true pope who has jurisdiction over the whole church, and he cannot be judged by no one, a doubtful pope, whereas the very evidence of heresy convicts the man, or comes close to convicting the man, then he's a doubtful pope and he can be judged by the church, and the mechanism for putting him on trial is described by John of St. Thomas. And it has to be followed. They have to go through the process of removal. And it will be easily done once the heretics take that final step and declare their heresy in such a manner that the doctrines that they proclaim, the doctrines they profess, and they do it so carefully in such a manner that they are condemning the past belief of the church, then you have the smoking gun evidence to use against them and say, look, these people are not in the church. They are on the outside looking in. We can have no longer, as Catholics, we can no longer have anything to do with them. We must stop calling them Pope. We must stop calling the man Holy Father. We must stop calling his gang of accomplices, stop calling them the pastors of the church. They are the enemy. They are the synodalists. They are the revolutionaries who are attempting to destroy the church. And the church has to separate. The church has to shun them and separate. Mm-hmm. The church has to separate itself from this gang of perverse heretics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The church has to complete the separation of itself from them, because they thrive on the deception that they are the church, that they are the leaders of the church, they are the legitimate pastors of the church, and that we have to obey them. And as long as we, as Catholics, are sucked into that net, they have us. They've captured us like fish that can't get out of the fish net.
This kind of goes back to what I was saying in the beginning. I follow everything you're saying. Everybody does. You're very articulate. But who is going to stand in the Vatican, in the church at the highest levels, and make these pronouncements, make these declarative statements that this man is not a pope, he shouldn't be called His Holiness or whatever. Somebody's going to have to make these statements within the confines of what's left of the church to either call for a split or call for action to be taken on the spot. I don't know which. Again, I believe
it's going to be a particular event. If it's not this event I name now, something as grave as it. But I think it will be with when they suppress the Mass as we as Catholics have known it for 2,000 years.
Yeah.
The renewal of the sacrifice of Christ on the altar. When they change it into something that is essentially different, that is no longer has any pretense of being the Mass, then the Catholics, the penny will drop, and the Catholics will finally understand that's a counterfeit church. That's not us. Those are not our pastors. Those are not our leaders. That is not our Pope.
Well,
we want out. We withdraw. We withdraw from them.
They have to.
Entirely.
That's
We've
right.
done them.
That's right.
That's what's
right.
going to, that's what has to be done, and that is what will happen.
Good. Good. We're out of time, Father Kramer. So is the Catholic Church. Time to take action, and let's hope this all transpires soon rather than later. Thank you very much for your time and wisdom. We'll talk again, Father Kramer. You be well.
Thanks. Bye now.
Okay. Father Paul Kramer, that's a monumental situation here. And I don't know, maybe I'm too much of an activist, but this has to be dealt with out in the open at maximum volume. Just my two cents. Okay. Have a great weekend. Take care. Prepare. Network will be with you all the time during the weekend. So will the website, and we'll be back on Monday. So have a good one and be well.